and work with Ming-Tae Huang, going back now about 5.5 years. And I think since we're at the IPAM, it might be good to tell the briefly tell the story of how Ming and I began to work together, because it came from a time which was actually not a very happy time in my department, when we were sort of split into these two sections. One was more or less pure math, the other was more or less applied math. And I'm not sure if Ming knew this at the time, but the applied math section was actually considering him for a joint appointment, which we still haven't managed to make, but never mind that. And so Ming came to the department about 5 years ago to give a colloquium. And our applied math group are mainly people who do things like computational biology, stochastic partial differential equations. It does not have much to do with this stuff. And so all of them were there, and I was there at the time because I was the chair. And none of the applied math group really had much of an idea of what Ming was talking about. It was not because he didn't give a good talk. He gave a fine talk. It's just a quite different field. And when I heard things like elliptic curves over finite fields and stuff like that, I said to myself, wow, I know something about that. And so we started to talk then. So I think it's a good story about how pure and applied math can now sort of come together by fate. So anyway, that being told, so let's start out with, let me see if I can use this pointer here. Here we go. We are going to note by blackboard bold F is going to be a finite field, but for the moment it is going to be a perfect field, just to be safe. I'm going to note by F bar is an algebraic closure of F. And pardon the tildes, but G tilde is going to be a connected algebraic group over F. And so that just means that G twiddle is a group that has the structure of an algebraic variety such that the group operations are actually going to be morphisms. And it's known that if you have an abelian algebraic group, then that sits in an exact sequence where on the right-hand side you have an abelian variety, and on the left-hand side you have got a linear group, which just means that that L is an abelian linear group, which means that it may be viewed as a closed subgroup of some GLN. In fact, it is known in this case that actually the linear group L is a product of a torus S with a unipotent group U. And I'm going to avoid the U. I think one it can be made to work, but I'm not sure that I see that well how to do it right now. So, but I just recall that a multiplicative torus is just something that is going to look like the multiplicative group to the D over F bar. Okay, so we will say that G tilde has no unipotent part if the U is equal to zero, and as I just said, we will assume this from now on. Okay, so suppose now that F is a finite field, and it will remain so until the end of the talk, if not until the end of time, and that G tilde may be lifted to an algebraic group over an algebraic number field, which I think is probably always the case, but I don't know of actually reference to that. But for all the ones that we will care about here, that is indeed the case. And that is to say that suppose there is a discrete valuation ring A whose fraction field is an algebraic number field, and whose residue field is our finite field F, and if there is an algebraic group that we can know by script G over this discrete valuation ring A, so that when you reduced script G modulo the maximal ideal of A, you just get this G twin. Okay? So we are going to deal with things that are with functors that look like Hom blank GM. And the thing that we need to remember is that Hom blank GM is not in general exact. And so we are going to have cause to consider its what's sometimes called the total derived functor, that is denoted by R Hom blank GM. And I think that if you don't know or care about R Hom, then I think for most of what I'm going to say that you need not be too concerned about that, and that it will be a quite concrete thing, as we will see next. Then something that I think is true, but I have not actually written down a proof yet, and is that there should be a pairing between the HI. So by like HI KG, I mean the Galois cohomology. So if I take K is my number field, and since I'm denoting the algebraic groups by G, it's not, so let me denote, say by H, in a little bit non-standard notation, is the absolute Galois group of K, so the Galois group of an algebraic closure, K bar, over K, then by the notation HI of K, G, I then simply mean HI of the absolute Galois group with values in the K bar points of G. Okay, so that's but I do not want to get into using G's again, as one often does for the Galois groups. So there should be a pairing like this in general. There is in some of the cases that I will be talking about in just a moment. So if this seems a bit too abstract, then here are some examples. So first is going to be the multiplicative group. Okay, so suppose that, and in fact that should have been a tilde G, is the multiplicative group GM over F, then we can certainly lift this to the multiplicative group over over any algebraic number field with a place that has a residue field of our finite field F. And in this case, don't get ahead of yourself, Wayne. That I believe is the case that the R Hom GM GM is just going to be Z. And if we look at, so we had the pairing before. Let me just turn back to that for a moment. I am pulling ahead. Let's go in the right direction. So we would like to unwind this H2 here. Here, so if I set I equals 0, which is going to be the case in which we're mainly interested, then we would like to understand this H2. And in the multiplicative group case, that's not that hard to do, because the H2 with values in Z is just going to be the H1k with values in Q mod Z. And that is that group is just basically Dirichlet characters, and then our pairing, if we take H0, I had a little bit of trouble with the pointer here, that it becomes a pairing of K star with H1 K Q mod Z, into the Brouwer group of K, which is so, please recall from the last talk, that if I take H2 of K with values in K bar star, that this is just the Brouwer group of K. Okay, and I think most of you know this pairing quite this pairing quite well. It's just basically the norm residue symbol, and in particular, if we do this over a non Archimedean place V, where we have that, as you learned from the last talk, that the Brouwer group of the completion KV is just going to be Q mod Z if V is not Archimedean, and we then have from the global reciprocity law that if we take the sum of the invariants, so if we look at this pairing over KV, then we can view it as then taking values in Q mod Z, and then we have that if we start with an alpha in HI KG, and again, the case that we will care about most is H0, and we have a beta in, I forgot to put a backslash here in my tech, then if we view them over KV for all V, then we will have the sum of the pairings of the alpha V with the beta V will be equal to zero, and then we'll come back to this. But that is just one example that you might think of if you find this general formulation to be too abstract. And then the other case we care about is that of elliptic curves. So if E tilde is an elliptic curve over our finite field F, then we can lift it to an elliptic curve over an algebraic number field K. And in this case, what we have is that the H2 with values in the R hom of EGM. So in this case, the hom of E with values in GM itself is going to be zero because E is projective and GM is actually affine, and there are no non-constant maps from E to GM. But if one looks at the X1 of E with GM, and these are calculated in the category of K algebraic groups, then as I think most of you know, this is just going to be E. So in general, when you take an abelian variety A and you take the X1 AGM, then you get the dual of A, and E is in fact going to be self-dual because it has a principal polarization. So when you go to unravel the H2KR EGM, then you simply get H1KE, which is the group of principal homogeneous spaces it is the group of principal homogeneous spaces under E over K. And then the pairing becomes one that I think is probably familiar to most of you from the theory of elliptic curves, where you take a K rational point of E, and let me point at those points, here we go, and we then pair that with a principal homogeneous space, and then we get an element of the Brouwer group of K. And in fact, if you want to see this explicitly, maybe I'll come over and write over here, that if we have, so if I have a beta if I have a beta in H1KE, and I have an alpha in H, H zero of, oh, sorry, in E of K, then the thing that I can do is if we view E of K in the form H1, as I just wrote down, X1 of E GM over K L of great groups, then if I have then if I were to represent an element, so this I can view as Hom as Galois of K bar over K modules. Probably people over there can't see this at all, but of Z. This could be the x1 of z with e of k bar. And in fact, let me just erase this because I actually didn't need this. I'm sorry, that's just kind of complicated. So if I have an exact sequence, I have just confused myself. So let me skip to the chase here. Sorry about that. So if I have something in X1 of E with values in GM, and if I then represent that by a short exact sequence that goes like this, so a zero goes to GM, goes to something that's going to sit in the middle that we don't really care about, goes to E, goes to zero, and if I take the k bar points, so I get zero k bar star goes to the points of this group that we don't really care about, goes to E of k bar goes to zero, and then if I have we then have a boundary map that goes from H1 of K, E of K bar, into H2 of K into K bar star. And so if I take the boundary, if I call this so then I have a boundary map, and then you can view this pairing by using this boundary map right here. Sorry, I know that I didn't say that very well, that is a slightly more concrete way to view this pairing. And again, you have, although I didn't write it down, you have the reciprocity law that the sum of the local pairings for all of the is going to be equal to zero. So the idea that we are trying to pursue is that if you have the discrete log problem in the group of points G tilde of the field F, then we try to actually lift it to K, and we find a place V of K that has a residue field F, such that in effect that we try to compute the discrete log in the completion KV. In general, if G is not projective, we will not be able to map G of KV onto G twiddle onto G tilde of the field F, but we can map G of the discrete valuation ring onto G tilde of F. And so if we are trying to solve the discrete log problem, we then try to lift to an alpha in G of of AV, and then where we start to use the duality theory is when we try to find a good what we might call like a test element beta that will be in this case an H2 of K R hom G with values in GM, and then use the reciprocity law to shift the computation of the alpha of the alpha V beta V to some other places where we might hope and indeed expect that it is going to be easier to do. And so if we are doing the discrete log problem where we have an element in G tilde of the field F that is of order say L, where L is a large prime, then one thing that we are able to do in some cases is to shift the computation from the places above the that are above the characteristic of the field F, say we call that P, that we then shift the computation to places above L, where we can hope and expect in some cases that it is actually going to be easier. And so if we can choose the beta well, then there will be when we take the sum of the alpha v beta v, there will be very few non-zero terms, and I will say more about that actually later. And actually, this method appears to be more robust than say for a example something like index calculus, which I won't go through because I think most of you know it a lot better than I do. But I think we can view this in index calculus in this theory as being where we choose a particular Dirichlet character B if G is the multiplicative group. Okay, so as they used to call it in the 1950s, the $64,000 question. Now I think you would want to take a higher power of two than that, or maybe we should call it the 64,000 euro question, which is a lot more than $64,000, as we all know. So, is how do we actually produce such a good test element beta? And as you saw in the last talk, and I think the themes are actually very similar, that we tried to use a exact sequences from global duality, and those will sometimes actually guarantee the existence of an appropriate beta, and the thing that is not clear to us, which is in some sense the key to the whole thing. So it could well be, quite frankly, that we have managed to put a nice sort of fluffy theoretical framework that yields us in terms of actual computation absolutely nothing. That could well be the case, in which case I will stop my talk pretty soon. But the thing that we hope though is that actually beta, although we might not know much about it explicitly, that in fact the only thing that is going to matter is how it actually pairs with the alpha v at a few well chosen places v, and so I just want to say clearly, as you heard from the last talk, that it's certainly not new, and it has been talked about by people, including Fry and his former students, Luke, and also Kim Nguyen. And so the thing that I want to do in the rest of the talk is to describe in sort of slightly more detail about how this works for the multiplicative group and for elliptic curves. The thing that I don't want to say is that if you're interested in there's something like Tor or space cryptography that I would expect but have not worked out yet, that you can do similar things where instead of using Poitou tape duality, or what we'll see later can be called, for example, like the Cassels-Tate a exact sequence for elliptic curves, that in the case of a torus, you could use Nakayama Tate, you could use Nakayama Tate duality, which is a fairly well-known thing, but I have not seen applied in this context yet. So that is something that I hope to work out. And the main reason why I tried to put this in a general framework of an abelian algebraic group over a finite field with no unipotent part is that I think that it could possibly be interesting to have cryptographic systems based on the discrete log problem in, say, like for example, something like a semi, in a semi abelian variety, and that's something that I've not seen before. Maybe there is a good reason why that would not give you much new, but my aim was to have this theory be able to apply to things like that, Okay, so let's then take the case of the multiplicative group, and let's then concentrate on the case of the prime field FP. And so we have the discrete log problem in the group FP star, and we have a large prime L that divides P minus 1. And so to construct the element beta, what we're going to do is that we are going to use the Poitou-Tate, Poitou-Tate duality sequence, and in fact that G there is actually not the same G as before, and I should not have used that notation, and I apologize for that. So what we're going to do is first we have to see the sequence. Sorry, it seems to have disappeared. Sequence. Yes, okay, so the part that we are going to use is going to be right here. So if you look at the third line from the bottom, the thing we are doing is that so U, and I should put this in more detail, maybe I can put it over here. So U is going to be the spectrum of O S, okay, where O is going to be the ring of integers in a real quadratic field, and then S is going to be a finite set of places so let me call the real quadratic field K, and then S is going to be a finite set of places of K. So then U is going to be an open subset of spec O, and we assume that L should be invertible on U. That does not appear to be strictly necessary, but it does make things somewhat easier. So then, if you look at the Poitou-Tate sequence, then if you look at part of out of it where you are using mu L, which is why it was good to it, that L be invertible on U, is that we have is the part of the Poitou-Tate sequence, as you know from the last talk, that it is a nine-term sequence, and the part with the H1s here is terms 4 through 6, and And if you look at the aim we have is to produce something in this H1U with values in Z mod LZ star. Star stands for the Pontryagin dual, and the idea, which is extremely simple and it's almost kind of duh, is to sort of compute the Z mod LZ dimensions of the things in the middle and on the left, and with a few sort of relatively mild assumptions about the class number of K, that we can actually compute the group on the left, and the group in the middle is not that hard to compute. And so the idea is that by choosing the S well, by choosing the real quadratic field well, and we would like for a example for say P and L to both split in the field K, it is crucial that P split so that we are going to have a place with residue field our field F P. That L split is not as crucial, but it at least we can understand what we were trying to do better in that case. So then just as a preview of some coming attractions for the elliptic curve case. So if I have an elliptic curve E tilde over a finite field, which in this case need not be a prime field, and then I have this exact sequence, the last row on that page, and I'll explain about this more in just a moment. But that is that sometimes called like the Castle's Tate a exact sequence.
Excuse me, the set of places, is it S?
Mm-hmm.
You can say something about it. For example, in the case of elliptic curve, the base of bulk reduction.
Yes. So
and the prime L.
Yes. So in the elliptic curve case, we need to take So in the elliptic curve case, we need to take more places because we must include the bad reduction places, and we also include the places above P and above L. Okay. And the strange thing that we're trying to understand better is that in the elliptic curve case, the bad reduction places do not appear to play that much of a role. And perhaps we are not seeing how they do play a role, but it does not appear that they do. So if L does not divide the order of the class group of the field OK, then the first sequence here that I'm just about to point at, that in fact this last map is going to be surjective. If you ask yourself, what is the chance that a large prime is going to divide the order of the class group of a, if you are given a real quadratic field, and what's the chance that a large prime is going to divide the class group? And if you look at Cohen-Lenstra heuristics, it does not appear to be that. I mean, it's probably not going to be that likely. So that's why to assume that, although it's not true in general, seems like it is a reasonable thing to do. So if we look at the elliptic curve. Elliptic curve sequence. Then, for this to exist, as like many of you know, that we need to assume that the L primary part of SHA is going to be is going to be finite. And although, of course, that is not known in general, we do know that in some cases where like E of K has got no rank. So for example, rank one, and I in some cases where E of K has rank two. So as I said, that this is sometimes called the Cassell's tape, and I think many of you know it maybe where you take all of the places V, and you look at the closure of E of K in the product of all of the KV, and then this maps to the dual of the group of the principal homogeneous spaces, H1KE dual, and then to SHA. And in fact, that last map is surjective. So then as I was saying, that we use the following extremely extremely simple strategy, that we just try to explicitly compute the dimensions of the spaces H. Of the groups H1KVG, and in fact we don't need the star there, but that is not so hard to do. But then the thing that is going to be somewhat harder, but still appears to be tractable, is to look for in the elliptic curve case to look for an algebraic number field K, an elliptic curve E over K that is going to lift E tilde, so that the FL dimension of the first term is smaller than that of the second in these sequences which I was talking about right here, because we want to produce some things in the third. And what is a bit strange, but I think tends to come when you talk about class field theory and about duality in general, is that it is easier to produce things in the dual, in a reasonably explicit way, than it appears to be to compute something to produce something in the H1U with values in Z mod LZ itself. And I don't know if that is sort of like a cognitive problem, or if it is a real problem that you do encounter in class field theory, that I sometimes know something better from a computational point of view in the dual than you do in the space itself. Let me just continue. So as I was saying before, that in the multiplicative group case that we take for K, so we have some element of like FP star, and in most when you do index calculus, then it seems to me as if you're lifting something in say FP star to say like a ring like Z, and then with some primes inverted, and then you take the units of that. The thing that we were trying to do was to make the multiplicative group case look more like the elliptic curve case. Because an elliptic curve is projective. If you can lift something to say like ZS or more precisely like OS, then of course you can then you can lift it to O, but of course for the multiplicative group you may not be able to do that. And so the thing that we thought was that if we take a real why do we take a real quadratic field? Well, it is because, as you know well, actually the units are of rank one, and so we can hope to actually lift that we can hope to lift something in the field FP star to actually something in OK star. And we feel that leads to certain advantages that have to mainly do with the fact that when you pair a unit with, if you're at a place V and you're pairing a unit with an unramified character, then you know that that is going to be equal to zero. And so that is going to help simplify the computation in a way that you don't exactly get when you do index calculus. And so that's why we care about real quadratic fields. And so the things that we need to assume, so we have the set S here, which is, and in fact here we are, I mean, we can arrange to take one prime above L and one above P, and then we have to make what appears to be a relatively innocuous hypothesis, but may not be, is that the fundamental unit is not an nth power in at least one of the O V star or the O the W star. And in the elliptic curve case, it is a bit trickier, as that you have to find a curve of, I mean, if you want to make this work, while it may well work for curves of larger rank, it would actually appear to work better to produce this test element beta that it would be good to have a curve of small rank. And the reason for that, or smaller rank, is that if you look at the sequence here, and if you compute the ranks, I mean, as I have them here, these are actually ZL modules, but if you compute the ZL rank of the thing in the middle, if the ZL rank of the thing on the left is smaller, then you will produce something that you want in the right turn. And actually, this appears to be quite different from when you try to do index calculus on elliptic curves, because that appears to require curves that are going to be of large rank. And so that's something that we are trying to understand better. Sorry, just scrolling back here. So if you look at the expected ranks of elliptic curves, it seems to me, and perhaps some people can correct me if I'm wrong, but that the conventional wisdom is that in some sense most elliptic curves are of quite small rank, and say something like 0, 1, or 2. And for us, actually rank 2 would do quite nicely. And we think that if you look at work of, like, for example, people like Keith Brown and I think Rubin and Silverberg have a bunch of work in this direction, that in fact what we need to do that I will not explain is to start from a lift of our elliptic curve over FP to an elliptic curve over elliptic curve over Q, and then to find a quadratic twist of the curve that would be of to find a suitable quadratic field so that the curve would have rank 2 over that field. And actually using twists, that appears to, if not be actually doable, to be extremely reasonable, that you should be able to do it. And one case that we had thought we could do about a year ago, but we have had to back away from that, is when both in the multiplicative group case and in the elliptic curve case, is when the prime L is such that L minus 1 is sufficiently smooth that this appears like it may be tractable by our approach, but we have not been able to do that yet. So the thing that I want to say clearly is that we have no concrete cases where we can actually prove that the by that we can prove by using these methods that the discrete log problem is actually going to be any more tractable than it is known to be, but we hope that this might itself or perhaps inspire other people to actually do that, and so we hope that this might be helpful. So I think that I spoke a little bit faster than I wanted to, or perhaps I had less to say than I wanted to, and so I think maybe I will stop there, and thank you for your attention.